Welcome to episode 197 of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts Andrew, David, and Jen. This week we read Thor Visionaries, Volume 1 by Walter Simonson. And now, the cast begins.
It was fun. I don't know, I'm enjoying the new expansion.
Yeah, I hear it's a really good expansion.
It is. It definitely is.
And they said their subscriber numbers are back over 10 million.
Yeah, that's why the launch was so terrible. It's because, like, so many people.
Yeah, they got, like, 3.5 million people, like, resubbing. And on top of that, they were hit with a DDoS at the same time.
Yeah.
Which is ridiculous. It's ridiculous that they were even able to keep the servers up.
Yeah, they are absolved of all issues because that was so not their fault.
Yeah. Like, I imagine most other companies would have just let the servers go down and been like, oh, I don't know, we'll be back in a week.
Yeah. And they gave 5 days free to everyone, too.
Yeah, I saw that. That's cool. That makes up for the 5 days I haven't been playing at all. It's not that I don't want to play it, and I started out just, like, waiting out the queue, but now the experience bonus in SWTOR goes away on December 1st or 2nd or something like that.
Ah, so you gotta carry through for, like, the next week.
Yeah, so I want to maximize it, and I might miss, like, the opening raiding or whatever, but I'm pretty sure my guild won't be raid ready anyway, right on the 2nd.
So yeah, and you never want to raid on the first day. We've done that a few times, and it's like, it's hellish. It just crashes over and over.
I figured it'd be like slamming your head into a wall, like trying to figure out the mechanics on the fly.
People usually already have guides written out.
From the beta.
So yeah. What it is, oh god, the worst one ever was when Naxxramas opened. Like, it was plagued with lag for weeks, but the very first day, it's like you'd take two steps and everything would crash and disconnect and... Blew. Oh, yeah. So raiding on the first day is never fun, and I don't think even we will do it. We'll probably wait, like, 5 days or something. Hmm. But I will say, like, the garrisons are pretty cool.
Dude, I've been hearing that from everybody.
I think you'll like them a lot.
Well, from what I hear, it's like a... like steroided up version of Star Trek Online's like crew system, because Star Trek Online already has a system where like your ship has all of its, like, you have your bridge officers that you take with you on missions, and then you have like your ship's crew that you can send out on missions.
Yes, it is actually very much not, like that.
All right, you ready?
Yeah.
David?
Oh yeah, go ahead. All
right. Okay, everybody, welcome to another thunderous episode of Atomic Powered Supercast. My name is Andy, and I'm hanging out with Jen.
Hail!
David.
Verily!
And this week, we're starting off our Volume 2 series leading into Episode 200.
Well, that's like 200...
It's like 4 years worth of podcasts.
Oh my god.
So many...
So we're starting off, so what we're doing for this arc is we've read a lot of freaking comics, and we each picked one that we wanted to go back to and read another trade in that run, or another thing in that vein. So originally we read Thor Visionaries, Walter Simonson, but we read Volume 3, because that had Thor Frog of Thunder, which is baller, and you should read that too if you haven't. But when we decided to revisit it, we were like, fuck it, let's read Volume 1, why not? So this is Volume 1 of Marvel Visionaries by Walter Simonson, collecting Thor 337 to 348. And, like, I had really... The thing I remember most about Volume 3, the Thor Frog of Thunder stuff was all really great, but there's a page that's just burned in my head. Can you guys guess which one it is?
Is it the page where Executioner fights those guys on the bridge?
Yes.
That'd be my guess, too.
Oh, my God.
So good.
You know, and I'm rereading this, and I'm thinking, like, it's amazing how this comic can use these bright colors everywhere. And it's just flat, bright colors. This world looks on the surface to be just so, like, flat and black and white, hard lines. There's not, like, shading in here, even, unless it's done with pencils, you know? There's no color shading in this, really. And I remember, like, how did this comic pull that kind of emotion from me? And then I'm reading this, and I'm getting, like, similar feelings of emotion, like, around some of these other characters, like Baldur and his thing when he's in hell and sees all of his dead, like, all of the people that he's killed. And it's like, ah, oh, how is this so good and the art so old school? It just works.
There's so much emotion in this comic. I mean, I hate to just say emotion a bunch of times, but that's the best way to describe it. Like, I put bookmarks in my trade of places where I was like, oh, the feels. Because I was like, oh my god, there's so much of that in here. Like, for example, the part where Odin moves the enchantment off of Thor and onto Beta Ray Bill, and he can turn back into himself.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah.
That was part, good.
Like, so good.
I was like, oh, man, that's... I was like, Odin, you're such a nice guy. Because, like, it was an emotional scene, because, you know, Beta Ray Bill thought he was gonna be... He had resigned himself to his fate of being himself forever, and because he's such a good guy, Odin gave him such a great gift.
Well, not just good guy, too. Like, he's wise, right? Because he's like, mm-hmm. I don't need to make a second enchantment. I have this one for my son, who obviously doesn't need it anymore. Like, he's learned temperance, and he's not still fighting with Beta Ray Bill. Like, he lost, and he took it with grace, actually. So mm-hmm. I don't think he needs this enchantment anymore as a punishment, so I repurpose it. Isn't it nice, 2-for-1.
It's so, like, wonderfully illuminating about their personalities to Thor and Beta Ray Bill, because what was originally a punishment for Thor and a lesson became, like, a gift to Bill. And it's... I don't know, I really like what that says about Bill's personality, that he can, you know, he doesn't need this humility, and it's something entirely different for him. Like, he wants so badly to be normal again, whereas for Thor, he can't abandon being a god. Like, that's so ingrained in who he is.
Well, so Thor had something taken away from him to a certain degree. And so did Bill. And by moving the enchantment, Odin was able to give them back give each of them back what had been taken from them.
Yeah, it was a sweet moment. And especially, I mean, later Sif decided to go with Bill too.
Yeah.
And join him, and I love this. I love this comic so much.
the other scene that, like, got me, and I swear, I'm not gonna, like, say that I cried, but I had that, like little welling up feeling when Eilif the Lost got...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. That was so baller. when he's like, oh, I can feel it fading from me, but I have to do this, and he sticks in the spear, and Thor's like, yeah, fuck you, and finishes it off, only to then turn and find him... practically dead, but he goes off anyway into Valhalla. So good.
The funeral pyre was just...
Oh my god.
So, I love that he put the dragon at his feet, too.
Yeah.
Like, that was symbolic in so many ways.
I'm like, you're no longer Eilif the Lost, now you're Eilif the Dragon Slayer. So much cooler.
So good. That was my favorite side story. Like, I gotta say, and the part where it's just... like, these six tiny panels where Eilif, you know, he feels cowardly at first, but then he climbs up out of the rubble, and he's so weak, and you see the hand come up and grab the spear, and he's just like, I'm not gonna fail Thor. That's my favorite scene in this. Love it.
Man. There's so much good stuff to talk about in this comic. Like, I'm not sure, like, where to start.
I mean, this is one of the problems with having picked this one, is there's, like, two or three stories in here.
Well, let's just start at the very beginning, then. So, we open up with the the molten ingot of the star stuff that this mysterious force is going to forge into something. Because we, you know, it has the this mysterious figure placing the ingot on the anvil, and then we get the Walter Simonson doom, you know.
Yes.
And not only is it like saying this, there is something big coming, that is the sound that the anvil makes when something hits it.
Yeah.
And I think this is something that we don't see very often in comics anymore, is that the writers are really, they're playing the long game, right? And it's not that he's, and Simonson's not being subtle or any, I mean, he's not trying to do, like, be mysterious with this, like, weird foreshadowing. He's like, look at this shit that's coming. He's just going to drop it a little bit at a time into every issue. And Thor and Asgardians are going about their business, doing their Golden Realm thing, and there's this big something coming. And, you know, Thor faces these different challenges. You know, first he fights Battery Bill, and then they go and fight the demons and save Bill's fleet, and then he fights Fafnir, and then Malekith. And while all this is going on, some shit's going down. And we have this, and we don't really see until the end that kind of everything's being manipulated by this mysterious being who's forging a sword. And it really keeps, like, you know, if you it can really keep a person interested in the comic, right? I mean, if you stick around, there's theoretically going to be a big payoff.
Yeah, and I think it's not just that story too. I think Walter Simonson has a short, a middle, and a long game in this comic. The short is like Thor's primary story. That's what holds your interest, like, page to page. But then there's a middle game, which is Baldur's story, which goes the entire length of this comic and still doesn't get wrapped up.
Right.
And then the super long game is, I think that's Surtur, or I don't know.
Yeah, it's Surtur.
Yeah. The fire god who will bring Ragnarok. Like, that's like, you get a page per issue, maybe, of somewhere in the fields we know, somewhere beyond the fields we know.
Yeah.
This fucking giant man of fire is forging a sword. So he takes the core of the galaxy and makes it the ingot that he's going to start forging his sword from, happens to be the galaxy Beta Ray Bill's from, right? And then that's where the portal comes in, demons flood out, Beta Ray Bill fights Thor, all the Asgardians go in, kick some ass like they do, shut down the portal. And then Sif and Scuttlebutt have some girl talk on the way back. Scuttlebutt?
I
like to think that there was like a problem with the Asgardians universal translator. The mighty hero Bill and his ship Scuttlebutt. Like, the Asgardian Universal Translator has to be broken.
Well, there's a part where Odin calls him Beta Ray Thor also.
Yeah.
It's like, well, in one speech bubble towards the end before he leaves.
Well, he has the power. He's worthy.
Yeah.
So he shall be Thor.
He's Beta Ray Thor.
But I was actually really happy to read this, because I've known Beta Ray Bill in comics for a long time, but I've never read the story where he actually came from.
Oh, really? This is your first time reading the
This is my first time reading the Beta Ray Bill origin story, I guess.
Oh, cool. It's one of my favorites. Because it's like, you know, the whole inscription on Mjolnir, the whosoever holds this hammer, if he be worthy, shall possess the power of Thor. Like, nobody lifts the hammer but Thor.
Yeah.
Until there's this alien who's also a cyborg robot thing. And it's like, it's this is like a challenge that is not easy for Thor to overcome, because sure, he can try to punch out Bill, right? Obviously, he's not that good at punching him out, as we see, but he's not... Bill is not a villain.
No.
You know? And I think that is probably something very difficult for Thor to overcome.
Yeah, I think the big problem Thor has in this comic isn't anything about Beta Ray Bill being strong or any of that stuff. Like, you're right, he could punch Beta Ray Bill and they could punch each other back and forth. But I think Thor's bigger problem is that this guy is equal to me. And before now, I was the only person who could pick up this hammer. Beta Ray Bill's, like, existence almost kind of shatters Thor's self-identity. Because after the fight, he's like, kill me, there's one Thor. You have the hammer, you have Mjolnir, you're Thor. Like, I should die on this planet.
I think one of the most noble things about Beta Ray Bill is when Thor says that, he's just like, well, you know, you would have won in other circumstances. Like, this was in my favor. He's, like, really humble about it, and he tries to cheer up Thor. Right? It's,
in some ways, I think he's a better Thor than Thor is.
I think he is, too.
He seems like he's more noble than Thor. Like, because Thor, you know, Thor had to be knocked down a peg by Odin. And this is kind of the place where we see him. This is where he turns the corner and is like, is Thor again. He's not, he doesn't have to be Donald Blake. But Beta Ray, like, Bill has always been this noble guy. I mean, he gave up his existence for his civilization, you know. Everybody else gets to, like, ride around in the spaceships while Bill searches for a new home. He's like he's the Bill Adama. He's Beta Ray Bill Adama.
Oh my god, that's amazing.
Spot on.
So, I just, you know, I feel like I said, that for those reasons, he's more Thor than Thor is. At least at this point in the story.
Well, you know, I think part of what it is that at this point, Thor is supposed to be this impetuous youth, right? Like, he's always associated with the strength of youth and the, like, lack of forethought of youth. And Bill is Thor, like, as an adult. You know, he's seen some shit, and now he shoulders responsibility, and that's kind of his main focus. Whereas for Thor, it's partially responsibility, but it's also just this idea, like, that he wants to be the best. He wants to be the most worthy, the strongest. So Thor, it almost feels more like he's still competing to be these things, whereas I think for Bill, like, we find out from Scuttlebutt and Sif that's already happened for him. He, in his backstory, already, like, did that competition and fought for this position. So he's kind of like, he's Thor grown up, I think.
Well, and not only was he fighting to be the best, he was fighting for the opportunity to make the ultimate sacrifice for his people.
Yeah, he's...
it's like he's, like, super, super noble. I guess he kind of represents maybe an ideal version of Thor. But that's not the... But that, you know, being... That doesn't necessarily make the best... most interesting character. I think Bill is certainly an interesting character. I mean, he's one of those, he's a Thor supporting character who has endured and appeared in many other comics, you know, not outside of Thor stories, but, you know, he's someone that we as readers can measure Thor against.
Mm-hmm.
And not from a perspective of strength or like punching power, because the two of them are, in that regard, they're equal. And it, you know, it doesn't necessarily seem that way because they fight twice and Bill beats him both times. But I think not only does Bill's, you know, his statement about in any other circumstance, you could have beaten me. I think it does serve to reassure Thor, but at the same time, I think it helps reassure us as readers too, And then Thor later asks Odin, did you know that that was going to happen? And Odin doesn't really answer him.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that maybe to a certain degree, you know, those two statements are there to serve as a reassurance to us as readers that, yes, Thor is just as strong as Bill. And so that's not the Bill's physical prowess is not the not necessarily the reason why Bill beat him. And so that allows us to measure Thor against something else on a different on a different axis, I guess.
And I think it gives us an opportunity to measure Thor's problem against the problems of somebody who's in his same weight class, so to speak. So, like, Beta Ray Bill is maybe more Thor than Thor, but he still has his problems. Like, it mentions more than a couple times how he has a darkness in him from the sadness and the sacrifice that he's had to make. And I think Odin sees that. And I think that's why he chooses to give Beta Ray Bill the gift he does, because aside from giving him something back, like, Beta Ray Bill's problem will be that he needs to find reason for existence after his task is completed. They've closed down the portal. All he has to do is find his people a home, and then what purpose is there for Beta Ray Bill after that? What is there? Like, then he's just a superpowered being carrying around all of this weight and burden, and if you don't give this to him, if you don't give something for him to keep existing for, who knows what he becomes. He's proven the equal of a fighter to one of the higher Asgardian gods. You do not want that guy to go on a lost path.
Mm-hmm. And I think it you know, Bill talks about, he says he's loath to leave Asgard. And I think, you know, it comes up a couple times that Bill is, you know, he's the protector of his people, but because of the sacrifices he's made, he is not really one of them anymore. He's other.
Yeah.
And so he doesn't, you know, he has his responsibilities, like taking care of the Corbinite civilization, but he's not one of them. He's a security system, right? And so by having the power of Thor through Stormbreaker, he is Asgardian, and the Asgardians don't look at him. I mean, some of them do. The no-name characters think that he is hideous, or I forget the term one of them uses when Thor and Bill are recovering, but
like a beast, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. but Sif is like looks at him because he's just a great person.
Yeah, the no-name Asgardians are different in that, like, the Asgardian warriors see him as a warrior, and they see his nobility through the way that he fights, and for them that's all that matters.
Yeah, and so, like, you know, Sif would have gone with him even if he couldn't change back into his, like, normal Corbinite look, right?
Oh, yeah, she likes the horse face.
I'm sure that's exactly why she went with him. But no, that, like, because there's so much depth to his character, when I say character, I don't mean, like, comic book character. His, like, character as in his, you know, the things that make him who he is.
Mm-hmm.
And Sif really recognizes that. And so Bill, not only does he get more power to protect his people, but he now has a community, and his purpose is, like, reinvigorated, and he has a companion. And so his sacrifice has been rewarded. And, you know, going back to the comparison with Thor, I don't think Thor necessarily, like, looks up to him, but it shows Thor can see, like, I think it serves to reinvigorate Thor as the protector of Midgard, you know, mm-hmm. because they're both protectors of a civilization.
Yeah. I didn't even think about that. Yeah. But I have to say, I think one of my favorite scenes in that whole story with Thor and Beta Ray Bill is actually the scene with Sif, because the art is just so baller. It's the one where she's like fighting off the demons because they're going to shut down the portal, and the demons are in front of her, literally looking like a wave about to crash into her. That panel is great, and then the next panel, what page is this on? It's on page 82. I love the bottom panel. The bottom third panel is like super high contrast magenta on like cyan, like neonish colors, and her
even
face
the word
is just
yellow.
Dude, it's like just three stark colors, and her face is just like completely awash in this like neon magenta. But the high contrast and the moment, it just, I don't know. There's magic in the way Walter Simon and this colorist work together. I don't even know. Is this the same? I don't know who originally colored it, but it's the sharp contrast colors in that scene, and it's like the moment thunders up and you don't expect to get feels from magenta.
Well, I mean, this is like the type of thing you would see in a movie that is kind of trying to think of, not necessarily epic, but
really good.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm trying to come up with, like, I forget it.
Name other movies that it would remind you of.
I don't know.
Pacific Rim.
Sure, Pacific Rim. I don't know, Andy. I forget it.
I'm trying to be helpful. I don't know.
And in that same issue, there's the scene where Sif can like finally relax after Thor and Bill have collapsed the portal and the demons are like disappearing, and she's like, it's on the top of page 89, where she like falls at her knees because she's just so she's so relieved, and she is, you know, she can finally take a breath.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like this, and again, there's high contrast in this image. I mean, not necessarily to the same degree, but like the red parts of her armor are so vivid against the light colors behind her, and she's not standing like against the blue sky or anything. She's in space, so this is just the choices that Simonson and what's his name, George Roussos, that's the colorist. The choices they made here is to evoke some kind of emotional reaction from us. And I think it's like we can, you know, there's a lot of tension in this issue, and this single panel, I feel like, allows us to connect with what Sif is going through. This, you know, this opportunity to take a breath, relax. You know, she's against the dark blackness of space, standing on board Scuttlebutt's deck or whatever. I don't know. It's a spaceship. She's a spaceship. I don't even know. But it's like there's this. Sif is like washed in light. You know.
Yeah.
It's just, man, this is so good.
And then when that's all resolved, we go from that to ponytail plainclothes Thor. Yeah, I love the ponytail. And his name, what was it? Sigmund Jarlson.
Yeah, Sigurd. Sigurd Jarlson.
Sigurd. Not even Sigmund, Sigurd. And do you guys catch the Superman reference in the plainclothes
scene?
Yes. Oh my
God. Yeah. Well, the first like, you know, Nick Fury's like looking for something. He's like, oh, he gives him the glass. He's put these cheaters on. They always worked for that other guy. And
yeah,
then
we see the other guy.
Mm-hmm.
We see the other guy on the next page.
And they name him. They call him Clark.
Yeah.
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 And he's just as clumsy as Clark Kent.
You gotta keep up that that cover.
And there's even like a Lois Lane character.
Yeah.
The person who says, let's go, Clark. We're going to be late for the conference. She's like a brunette who's bossing him around. Which is exactly what Lois Lane does.
Yeah, that's kind of like her purpose in life.
Yeah, that was a great little, you know, a nice little nod to the distinguished competition. I believe that's what Marvel referred to DC as.
The distinguished competition. I like that.
That's great.
Yeah. So it was really awesome.
I will say, you know, those aviators, they did not suit Thor.
No.
I don't think they were supposed to.
Yeah, Clark pulled it off, like, way better.
You know what, though? And you say that, and you're like, oh, come on, really? Those shoulders are still there. But then the fucking foreman's like, I know who it is. It's Spider-Man.
Spider-Man. Like, well, he was right the first time.
Spider-Man had that build, really?
And he was just like, he got it right, and then he's like, nah, it couldn't be. And he's like, oh, it's definitely Spider-Man. Like, the fact that he got it and was just like, nah, man, that was the best part.
So we... And then we already talked about the Eilif thing. Do you guys want to... So we did Eilif.
That was a great, like, story.
Yeah, it was.
I don't remember reading that one. I'll put this out there now, because it'll come up later in this episode. But this Walt Simonson's run on Thor is my favorite comic of all time. Like, if somebody was like, David, what's your favorite comic of all time? This is immediately the comic that will come out of my mouth. And I didn't remember that Eilif story, and so that was one of those. When I read that, I was like, "Oh, the feels, more feels, Walt. What are you doing to me,
dude?" But that tells you something about the quality of this run. Mm-hmm. Like, that story is really good. In half of every comic that we've read on this, that would be like the standout part of the trade. That would be the thing that shines in your mind. But in Walter Simonson's run, I'm not saying that's forgettable, but you forgot it.
Oh my god, so the cover of issue 342,
yeah,
that's the issue with where we first meet Eilif. So it's the cover's by Simonson, and I look at the date on because he dated the cover. Mm-hmm. It is the day before my birthday.
Oh shit.
It is September 18th, 1983, so one day before my birthday, Eilif the Lost was born.
Now you know what you got. If you have another son, now you know what you got to name him.
Eilif? Yeah, I'm sure my wife will go for that.
Well, maybe I'll try it for my wife. I don't know why. It doesn't have any meaning for me. So then out of that storyline, though, we kind of transitioned into the whole Lorelei thing. Lorelei, what's her civvy name? Melody, right?
Melody, so
oh,
80s.
My God.
So 80s.
She, okay. Like, I don't know why it's just... She tries to drug him with date rape drugs.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why she thinks this is a great idea. Just, ugh. Okay, that's yeah. Whole
I mean,
thing.
It's Asgardian roofies.
Oh my god. It's just so ridiculous. And she keeps being like, she just keeps being like, drink this. And he doesn't even suspect, even though she looks the exact fucking same. Like, well, I don't get it.
I don't think he knows her from Asgard. I got the idea
really?
That he doesn't know her.
Okay.
I'm not 100% sure, but that's the notion that I got. Yeah, he knows her sister, Enchantress.
Yeah.
But,
well, Ivory knows Enchantress.
Yeah.
So, what gets me about her is in the process of trying to trick Thor into loving her, she's actually, like, going on multiple romantic dates with Thor. Like, if you weren't so wrapped up in the obsessiveness with him, you'd realize that you were actually with him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they were like, do you want to go over for a... they were going to go for, like, a carriage ride one night, or, like...
They do. They yeah. There is a carriage ride. It's, like, the beginning of... One of the, I think, issue 345.
Like, they're going on real romantic dates with each other. Like, Lorelei, if you just look at where you were in your life right now, you'd be happy. But you're so caught up in this idea of what you want that you can't see what you have. She's just, like, obsessed with it.
Yeah, it seems like what she really wants is just to drug him.
Like, one of the things, like, it wasn't clear to me, like, why she wanted to, like, make Thor love her.
Like, I think she's just obsessed with him.
Like, was there a purpose to it? I don't know.
I think she's a stalker.
She's a fangirl. Yeah, I just I didn't know where it came from. And she's the same one who was with Loki, and she put on the glamour of Sif, right?
No. So Loki.
Loki made her look like.
Loki pretended to be Thor. Yeah. Wait, are we talking about different things?
No. Oh, that's right. Sif came up. Loki pretended to be Thor, and Lorelai was herself to get Sif off of Thor.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, they tried to piss off Sif.
Yeah. So I mean, I guess she still would have needed to have done that. But I mean,
I get the idea that So Lorelai just actually loves Thor, like regular styles, but she wants to make sure it happens. So that's why she's asking Loki to help her.
Like, so that's just not how you do it.
No, but this is a good lesson in like, quit, like, don't obsess over the idea you have in your head of what it would be, the perfect date with Thor. Like, don't obsess over that, and like, live in the moment that you're actually in right now, Lorelai, because you have what you want. You really, really do. You just, you can't see it.
Well, I think maybe she's worried because...
Because like, she's Enchantress's sister? Or?
Yeah, like, Thor doesn't know that she's Amora's sister.
Yeah.
And maybe he'll say, "Lo, Lorelai, I cannot love you because your sister is evil," or something. I don't know. Because
the blood that runs within your vein is evil blood.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds as a guardian.
And that's kind of the thing. She doesn't recognize who Thor really is. Because we know Thor would not say that.
Yeah.
It's that she kind of has this image of what he's like. And completely ignores the reality of the situation.
Well, there's a lot of people who do not think they know who Thor is, but they really don't. And we get that with Eilif also.
Mm-hmm.
He thinks he sets the whole trap up because he his image of Thor is this dude who's going to get pissed off and murder him immediately, and that's not who Thor is. And so. There seems to be a slight theme running through this comic of people misunderstanding Thor to their detriment, or in Eilif's case, it ended up being a benefit for him because he probably would not have gotten into Valhalla had he just like tricked Thor into murdering him.
Yeah.
No.
But because Thor was like, "No, dude, this is the real Thor," they go off and Eilif has a warrior's death. It's all very Klingon.
Well, I mean, that's where the Klingons were modeled after, the Vikings. It's fine.
Do you think that Kalis is really Odin, Andy?
No, because Odin was never mortal. Kalis is mortal, and then Kalis achieves immortality.
Oh, I see.
Kalis kills the Klingon gods and takes their place.
Oh, okay. I was not aware of that. Thank you for clearing that up.
Yeah. So, I guess... Oh, who'd even more like... So, maybe he... Maybe the Klingons live in Ragnarok.
Oh, because there's no more gods.
Because there's no more gods, because... They're all
dead. So, Kalis is Surtur?
Yeah.
Or the Fenris Wolf?
No, not Fafnir.
No, the Fenris Wolf.
Yes.
Ah.
Is it Kalis? Because... Well, no, the wolf eats the moon. Maybe the Fenris Wolf is the thing that blows up the moon in Star Trek VI.
Mm.
Praxis.
Yeah.
We're going off on a deep tangent, and it's my fault.
It's fine. Although I will tell you, I could have gone off a tangent. We were talking about obsession and not getting wrapped up in reality, and I was about to mention how Summer Glau is pregnant and getting married, but I refrained.
Sorry, Jen, go ahead.
I was just going to comment on whether or not Klingons build their ships out of the fingernails of the dead.
Oh,
maybe they do.
That's a big callback all the way to Volume 3 from like 3 years ago. So listeners, if you want to know more about what Jen just said about fingernails, read Thor Visionaries Volume 3.
I don't know. I'd
have to, Good plug.
Yeah.
Or go back and listen to that episode.
I mean, you should anyway. I can't conceivably, like, I cannot conceivably envision somebody reading this comic and not at least mildly enjoying it.
I mean, if they don't, they're just wrong.
Like, just, I mean, anybody Nobody's can read that thing with Iliff and be like, oh, my heart. Such feels.
It's just amazing. It's so complete badassery.
Yeah.
On everybody's part.
So the part of the story we haven't talked about then is the Casket of Winters?
Ancient Winters.
Ancient Winters. Not just any old fucking Winters. Ancient Winters.
I have a lot of things to say about this storyline.
Okay, go.
They're all about food.
What?
What French fries make you dissolve? What cookies suck out your soul?
It's mortal food.
Magic Malekith cookies.
I mean, they called them unmortal wafers, but...
No, because, okay, later on, right, when Malekith threatens Rogers with feeding him the fairy food.
It's just...
Fairy food is the unmortal food. If you eat fairy food, then you become a slave of fairy. And if you eat mortal food after having eaten fairy food, then you die.
It's just part of... I mean, I know it's, like, part of the Marvel mythology and general mythology, but... Why?
What, a hamburger?
It boggled my mind that it was McDonald's that turned people to ash. Like,
it was Mickey B's. Yeah.
McBurger, yes.
Yeah. The McB is a cheap knockoff version of the Big Belly Burger.
Or like McDowell's in Coming to America.
It's really silly, but it's like it feeds into the whole vibe of this comic. I love that, like, you spend so much time reading about Beta Ray Bill and Thor and Iliff and Fafnir, and it all seems so epic and huge. And then it's like, okay, so this is Asgard, and Asgard is badass, right? But then you gotta perspective, like, okay, then what do we show in contrast to really let you know that Asgard is badass? Let's have somebody eating a hamburger. That's really bringing it back down to the mortal
being
level.
Force-fed.
Force-fed. This man ties up his secretary and force-feeds her a hamburger, and then she turns into a pile of ash. That happened in this comic. I don't know what to say.
And this is the same comic that gives you all of the feels.
We need all of the feels.
But see, like, even the silly parts, like, the comic is still pretty awesome. I mean, look at the cover of 346 where Thor's fighting, like, the monster chihuahuas. I turned that page and I was like, what the fuck is this? But it was still amazing. It was still great. There was, like, I don't know. It was still good. Malekith's like a clown, I think.
Yeah, he never seemed threatening to me. You know? Like, Loki... I think, like, Loki and Malekith are in the same kind of class of villain, right? Like, they know that they can never possibly go toe-to-toe with Thor. They know that. So they do all this other tricky shit instead. But I feel like Malekith is just the shitty version of Loki.
Yeah, he gives off this, like, pompous pretty boy villain kind of air. Whereas Loki at least seems a bit more scheming. Like, Loki does real harm at times. Like, it's because of him that Baldur got dead. So, oh, yeah. I mean, we know he's capable of doing harm. Malekith just... He kind of gets on the scene and he's feeding people, you know, like...
McBee's. Fairy
food. Yeah, and it's just...
Well, and Loki in this comic drives Baldur to kill himself. Like, does it again.
Yeah, he's pretty messed up.
Like, that's so fucked. I know I killed you, and you came back from the dead, and you're here against your own wishes, but I'm gonna fuck with you so much you want to kill yourself.
You definitely, like, understand that Loki is not doing greater harm just because it doesn't amuse him at the moment.
Yeah.
You know, whereas Malekith seems to be trying his utmost to conduct evil deeds, and he's just not very... I don't know. He's very evil.
He's more, our favorite phrase, mustache twirly.
Yes.
Yes.
That's, whereas Loki actually has complexity and depth, and like, Loki's not doing evil for the sake of evil, or because some other more evil person is telling him to do evil things. Like, he's doing things out of his own motivation, and his own accord, and it's just whether or not he decides to fuck with somebody any given day.
Whatever and that's wants and that is just what it is. He's fucking with somebody because Lorelai says, "What do you get out of this, Loki?" And he's like, "This will amuse me greatly." And that is it.
What? Why are you helping me with this, Loki?
It's because
for the shiggles.
I want to fuck with my brother.
Yeah, but Malekith doesn't. Oh, it doesn't seem like a. It seems like Malekith just has a bunch of... His shadow thing is really apt. Because not only does he go from shadow to shadow, but he schemes in the shadows, he builds his army in the shadows, he lives in the shadows from the mortal world, like, you can't see him if you're mortal unless you do this. He's even, like, shadowed from Thor's vision. Like, his big thing is just, like, the... can't hit what you can't see. But as soon as he comes into the light, or as soon as he steps forward in any little bit of way, he's just gonna get his dick kicked in. And it's like, all he can do is stay in the shadows, build up in the shadows, come up a little bit, get beat bad. Stay in the shadows, build up in the shadows, and then get beat bad.
I mean, you know, what makes him seem so dangerous at first is that I think he says it was he who pursued Odin's ravens all the way back to Asgard and killed one of them, right, and heavily damaged another, and Odin had imbued them with great power. So you get the sense that if anything can mess with Odin, it's like a really big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And then he actually comes to Earth, and it's such a letdown, because he doesn't in any way seem like he could stand up to Odin. Like, if Odin had decided to actually, like, come down and take care of this, it'd just be done. So we get this huge built-up threat of, like, oh, you know, something can challenge the king of the gods. And, well, no, it can't.
And it doesn't help that his costume is fucking ridiculous. And I say that in a comic that has Volstagg.
Volstagg is not ridiculous, Andy.
Yeah, Volstagg's the best.
His costume is a little ridiculous.
He's voluminous. But he's not ridiculous.
He's fabulous, is what he is.
He's amazing. I love the way he handles that guy who comes out to kill Baldur. It's just, like, so casual, but he's, like, just beating him around. Like, it's nothing.
I know, he, like, let me dust you off, and he, like, smacks him around a bunch.
And the guy's like, oh, ow, 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 fuck, ow. It's like, I'm just dusting you off. You really thought you were going to fight Baldur? You should be so lucky. But yeah, I didn't really have a lot of context about Baldur before this comic, but now I am thoroughly in the camp of Baldur is a badass. Because he's supposed to be, like, overweight and out of shape in this comic, but he's just a baller all the way through.
Well, when we read Volume 3, Baldur had recovered.
Mm-hmm.
And he was going on some adventures. But I don't really remember. I'm going to have to go back and read that now.
I gotta find Volume 2. I haven't read Volume 2 of this. I just need to buy the goddamn omnibus.
I know. I do too.
Oh, I wish I had bought it when it was new for like $75. Now I can... You're lucky if you can find it for like $130.
Oh, don't tell me that.
I know, because I tried to buy it for $120 the other day.
Oh.
I want it so bad.
So, I feel like they introduced Baldur very well, just in that when you first see him, you know, he's Baldur the Brave, but he's sitting there eating his feelings. Just like straight up.
Full stack.
Like,
dude, that's the Asgardian version of, I had a bad day, I'm gonna eat a pint of ice cream.
Except it's like, you know, a year-long feast. Yeah. Just because.
Yeah, for shigs. Just because that's what his buddy Volstagg is doing. But I love that even in doing that, though, Volstagg is telling Baldur, like, I'm here to be your bro, but I will not have this year-long feast with you if you're doing it for the wrong reasons.
And he straight up says, you're eating wrong.
Yeah.
And I love that.
And believe me, I know how to eat, and you're doing it wrong.
I love that he's like, I better inspect his larder. And Volstagg, and then Baldur, like, later comments, he's like, good thing I stocked up my larder. It'll keep Volstagg busy for a while.
Well, he knows his buddy. Yeah. By the way, anytime you come to my place, you're welcome to expect my larder.
All right.
I'm gonna put a sign on my pantry now that says larder. Confuse the shit out of my wife.
So, if you really think about this, this is actually, like, the most depressing thing in the comic. Because Baldur is like, okay, I'm going to go commit suicide. And instead of leaving a note or anything, I'm going to distract my friend by filling up my fridge. He's going to check on me and come to my house. Then he's going to eat all my food, because that's the kind of friend he is. But I'll be dead. Oh my god, that's so dark.
Well, that's how Baldur the Brave rolls.
That's the darkest thing ever.
But I do have to say, I really like the scene with the Norns where Baldur gets his shit together. That whole thing with the tapestry could have been, like, abstract and annoying, but I think it was done really, really well. That was awesome. Like, I remember, what was it, Iron Man? Where at the end, there's, like, all this really abstract shit with him, like, climbing through wires. And what was the other one? Oh, Dark Phoenix.
Yeah.
Where she's, like, with the builder guy, and I'm like, this is so meta. There's so much deep-level shit going on here, I don't even fucking know. And I, like, couldn't, like, not that I couldn't put it together, it's just like, this is, it feels out of place, that kind of commentary and that kind of comic. But this is done really well because this feels in place. This feels like it fits in this world 100%. And it's an abstract idea, and it's a way of kind of pulling Baldur out of the world that he lives in and showing him a lesson in a way that he has lost perspective, but does it in a way that doesn't take you out of it as the reader. And I think that's beautiful. So there.
Well said, Andy.
Yes.
What was your guys' favorite scenes?
I'm glad you said scenes, because I would be hard-pressed to pick a single scene.
Oh, I have a favorite panel.
Oh, okay, you go first.
What is her name? Goes to try and stare down Fafnir.
Melody.
Lorelai?
It is Lorelai, right? Okay. She goes stare down Fafnir, and Fafnir's like, oh, you silly woman. But I really like the corner of the page where it's like their staring contest, and it just gets into smaller and smaller boxes, and it's just the dragon's eye. Like, inside the frame, inside the frame, inside the... Oh my god, that was so cool. I was like, well, you don't mess with framing very much, and that was awesome. Do that more. That was, because it's like, on a page, how do you draw the idea of a stare down? You know?
Mm-hmm.
And that, it's such a big thing to tackle. And this comic is so dense, he doesn't have a lot of room to do it. Like, it's going to happen in half a page. So it's not like you can be like, and they stared each other down across the eons of time, and you just have like four full page splashes of them like staring each other down. You have to do it in half a page. And he does it, and it's just like, it's not like a majestic scene or one of the feels of this comic, but it was just like, that is so smart. Like, I would have never thought of that, and that's why I don't do comics. That's why I sit here and I armchair it. What about you guys?
You just stole mine.
No! I'm so sorry.
The other one I mentioned earlier when Eilif is grabbing his spear out of the rubble. That's like so... I feel like it just captures the whole spirit of the thing, where he's kind of like old and weak and turning cowardly, but then he always has this change of heart where he summons up his bravery and is a true warrior, and it embodied his character so well. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, my runner-up for favorite scene, it was the funeral pyre. I'm such a sucker for those moments where, like, people get the recognition of somebody that they looked up to or who they really believed in or respected. Like, when they get that respect back, oh, those scenes. Like, fucking, it's the stupidest thing. In Return of the King, when the hobbits are standing atop Minas Tirith and the king bows to them and then everybody else bows to them, I cry a little bit every time. Every time. And I almost cried at that scene in this.
Well, like I said a few episodes ago, I have that same reaction when Han saves Luke in A New Hope.
Yeah. What about David? What was yours?
I don't know. Like, I'm flipping through, and it's...
What's the first one you think of?
Well, since we started doing the episode, I keep thinking back to that panel you mentioned where... The high contrast one with Sif's face. That one's really good. I don't... It's so hard. Like, I really like the scene... Like, the... I really like... It's on the third page of the comic. The first time we see the Doom. Like, man. That's such a great full page. And there aren't a lot of full pagers in here.
No.
They're all the one... But almost every... A lot of the ones where we see Surtur are full pagers. And I think that's a really effective tool in this comic, because there aren't a lot of full page spreads. So when Simonson does use them, it really communicates the grandeur of Surtur. Like, how big this guy is. Because even Fafnir, I don't think, really gets a full pager. He gets, like, a two-thirds or three-quarter page, but not the whole thing. And it it's like a subtle way of communicating stature, you know?
And, like, scope. Like, he's crushing a galaxy into an ingot. Like, you need a full page for that, bro.
Oh, I also like the page... It's at the end of issue, at the end of 337, where Donald Blake thinks he's stuck.
Oh, yeah.
And he's, like, yelling up at the sky, Father. Oh, yeah. And then it says,
Father,
you know...
hear me!
Oh. And the last little bubble of narration says, and only the wind and rain reply.
Oh.
It's pretty awesome.
Dinglies.
And I kind of love every time Volstagg appears on the page.
He is. He's just great. He is. I mean, he is my favorite... Asgardian other than Sif and Thor. I really do think he's my favorite Asgardian, more than Loki.
He's such a fun character, and he, you know, I think he's the most like colorful of the Warriors Three, but he's also the most fleshed out, I think. I don't really know that much about Hogan and Fondral, but
Fondral's dashing and Hogan's grim.
Yeah, and Volstagg's, we know he's voluminous, but he's also got 18 kids.
Yeah. And what does he say? Like, a wife that can sink a boat?
Yeah, sink a longship.
But I love that he says that with pride. He's like, I got 18 kids and a fat wife, and I love my life. Love all of it. Fuck yeah. Like, I love Volstagg.
Exactly. He just loves everything.
But... Hogan and Fandral aren't really in this, but Hogan gets one panel that's really good.
Yeah, Fandral's in it.
Volstagg's like, but Hogan doesn't forgive. And you turn and Hogan's just like, no, I don't, bitch. I'll crush you.
It's pretty great.
That was good. Anyway, you guys ready to write this?
I mean, you might as well just get me out of the way.
Yeah, I got to hanker in what you're going to say, David.
Because I'm going to give it 5.
Oh, shocker.
How could I not give my favorite comic of all time 5? So, you just go ahead. Continue. Go. Who's next?
Okay.
That's all I'm going to say.
I'll go. It's a five. Like, oh. there is no doubt. That's all. Like, it won.
I think there's a reason why that this trade that I'm holding, the top line on the page is Marvel Visionaries. I think that says a lot.
And you know how many other Visionaries comics they put out with?
None. I don't think there are any.
The only right? Marvel Visionaries comics are Walt Simonson Thor Visionaries. Those are the only ones. Because I think they were going to start a line of comics called Marvel Visionaries, and they started with Thor, and they might have realized nothing else is in this class, so we'll just rename it Thor Visionaries.
It is. The spine says Thor Visionaries.
Yeah.
But the cover says Marvel Visionaries, so.
Yeah, so I'm also going to give this five. Let me ask you one question, though. Do you, as a reader, like this one better, or do you like Volume 3 better? Or is that even a fair question?
It's not. It's really hard to separate them, because they both have so much good stuff. I mean, like, at the beginning of the episode, I knew when you said, what's your favorite, I forget what the question was, but Jen and I both immediately knew that you were talking about the scene where Executioner dies.
Yeah.
And it's like, there's moments like that in here. Yeah. There's the whole Iliff story.
Yeah. And you're never going to forget the funeral pyre.
We're never going to see that character again. But his impact is huge. Huge. In a story that is building up to Surtur. You know? And this two-issue story about a guy being the last Viking. Like, it's so good. So good. And, like, if you, like, break it down, it's about Thor and a dude fighting a dragon.
Yeah. That's all it is.
And it's, like, oh, man. It's all in the delivery. It's, like, I can't get over it. I can't get over it. It's my favorite comic.
Legit. I'm also going to give this a five, by the way. I mean, if there's any question. But I will also add, though, this is something I don't think you could get today. I mean, never mind that writer-artists are way more rare than they used to be, but the idea that you can be writing and drawing a comic and have the complete faith of the company to be like, I'm going to start a storyline and it's going to take me 24 issues. Like, build up for Surtur, get Surtur out, get through Surtur's story. It's going to take me 24 issues. Are you cool with that? 2 years? I'll just start it now. Like, for one, I feel like that kind of faith in the writer and the artist doesn't exist as much anymore. And I don't know. I mean, it's chicken the egg, but writers and artists bounce around a lot more now. And I don't know if they bounce around because, like, if you're an established writer and you say, you know, I've got this really good idea for Spider-Man, can I come write Spider-Man for 3 years? Mm-hmm. Just, I'm going to come do Spider-Man for 3 years. Like, I feel like that doesn't happen as much anymore. Nowadays, I say, I've got a really good idea. I'm going to spit it out in 6 to 12 issues, and then I'm going to, in that span, come up with an idea for another hero, bounce to that one, write that one, bounce, 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 bounce. Like, I feel like that happens a lot. And one of the few areas where that doesn't happen is in indie comics and the creator-owned stuff. And I think that's why Marvel's so good these days, because, well, not Marvel, Image. I feel like that's why Image is so good these days, because Image makes that commitment. Image will be like, this is your story, bro. You own this as much as we do. Have fun. And that's, I think that's why Image is doing so good, because they're following the Walt Simonson plan. I don't know. That's pulling something out of my ass. But I think about this run a lot and how, like, it just doesn't happen like this anymore. It really, really, really does. And when it does, it pays off. Like, what are the other ones that are like this? Geoff Johns' run on Flash was like 4 years long, and that reaps such amazing rewards.
Or his Green Lantern.
Green Lantern, yeah. Just, if you...
Or Bendis on Avengers for such a long time. I mean, yeah.
Because the opposite happens, right? Like, you can pull creativity out of a writer by having them hop around, and then they can get their ideas out for a bunch of different characters. But I feel like with something like this, if you say, no, Walt, you're our Thor writer, and you do not get to stop writing Thor, you do not get to go somewhere else, write the 48th issue in your run. Like, Walt Simonson has to sit down and be like, okay, I've done everything I can thought of for Thor. Like, at a certain point, you tax your own creativity and you're surprised at what you come up with. Like, I doubt Walter Simonson started writing Thor with the idea of Frog of Thunder in his head. I seriously doubt it. But 3 years into a run, you'd be surprised what you come up with. Which, actually, I think is the exact kind of thing I've said when we covered this the first time. So, Volume 2, bringing it all around, bringing it all around.
Well, since we typically men talk about, is this a good starting point for somebody who wants to read Thor? I think that the answer is obvious there. So what I will do instead is say that there are a lot of other good runs of Thor. Maybe not as good as this, but there's some great ones. I know J. Michael Straczynski gets a lot of... He's kind of a polarizing character, creator in TV, but his run on Thor that started in September 2007 is excellent. It picks up Thor after Marvel's Civil War arc, and it's really, really good. The current run on Thor is excellent. Well, now it's the female Thor. That started in October last month. I've only read the first issue so far, but it was really good.
I'm gonna get the first five or six issues built up in my thing by my bed, and then I'm just gonna sit down and gorge on them.
I believe that's Jason Aaron, right?
I think so. I don't know. I have one of those white covers that doesn't say. I can see it from here, and it doesn't say on the white
cover. And there's a Dan Jurgens and John Romita Jr. run on Thor. Mm-hmm. From the 90s, I believe.
Dan Jurgens in his prime.
Yeah. It's a Jurgens Romita Jr. So the art, you know, some people are, I think, John Romita Jr.'s art is kind of, you know, people love it or hate it, but it's still a pretty great comic. Yeah.
Nice. All right, so that wraps up this one. Next week, we're going to read Jen's pick for Volume 2. We're going to read Full Metal Alchemist, Volume 2. We first read Fullmetal Alchemist during our anime series. Not anime, sorry, our manga arc. Was it our first one or second one?
I think it was our first manga arc.
Manga arc? Oh, that was way back in the day. Shit, I might have to read the first volume of this just to remember where the hell it ended.
Yeah.
So that's going to be next week. That collects issues 5 through 8 by Hiromi Arakawa. And then we got some fun stuff after that. My pick comes up last. And if you want to know what my pick is, you go to www.apsupercast.com. On the right, you click on a button that says Future Shows. It'll show you everything we've got coming up to issue, up to episode 200, because nobody knows what's going to happen after that. Everything's going to change at episode 200, and nothing will ever be the same. Nothing. Nothing. But if you have a suggestion for what we should read after that, send us an email at
atomicpoweredsupercast@gmail.com.
Plus, there's all the social media stuff. Facebook.com/APSupercast, Twitter.com/APSupercast, and APSupercast.tumblr.com. And as always, please subscribe to us on
iTunes.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Till next week. Goodbye.
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 I say thee nay.
I say thee nay.